So welcome all to month six Investable ETO briefing that covers the trading period from the 1st of June to the 30th of June 2023. I hope you will all find it interesting as we look closer at what is happening within Credit Exchange. Firstly, today we'll begin by looking at a trade finance originator and having a refresh on the core principles credit was built on. Next, we'll show you some of the work that goes on at our deal desk and some of the potential projects the team are looking at. And there will also be our monthly segments on the Seaborn reports and the state of the European and global economies. Then we'll be looking at the briefing itself and some of the key information from it and some updates on credit. So for now, for our first topic, I will hand you back to Andrew.
Thanks for that, Ruby. So for today's original piece, as kind of Ruby talked about, we're going to look at a type of financing that I haven't mentioned over the last couple of briefings. So with all our shipping transactions and mining transactions taking up pretty much all of our conversations recently, I decided, you know, it's important that we don't forget our roots and take a look at the original trade finance business that credit was based on and what it used to help hundreds of companies across the UK and Ireland. So the originator I want to discuss has actually been with us since 2019 and has traded a total of over 37.5 million euro. And in June, they traded 1.5 million euro alone. So this originator trades across multiple debtors, such as NUIG in Galway, Irish Distillers Limited, but their primary debtor is Nestlé. And as some of you will recognize, Nestlé is a consistent member of our top 10 largest investable ETR holdings list, and this month is no different, with the world's largest food and beverage company coming in at fourth this month. Now, this was not always the case. As mentioned, this originator joined the exchange in 2019, and back then they were only invoicing Nestlé for about 170,000 euro per month. This level of financing would not earn a debtor in our place in our top 10. To get a place on our monthly leaderboard, a debtor needs to have roughly 500,000 euro of outstanding holdings with credit. And as mentioned, with a monthly trading figures of 1.5 million, this is currently earning fourth place. The trade desk then expects this monthly figure to grow even further for our originator. As they bring on more debtors and continuously increase their holdings with Nestlé, it would not surprise me or other members of our team to see Nestlé at the top of the holdings list in the coming months. And as you can see also from our top 10 rated list, Nestlé is the only investment grade rated debtor with active holdings. To have an investment grade rated debtor so high on the exchange's debtor list is fantastic, really, and something we hope to get more of in the coming months.
Sorry, Andrew, just to interrupt. But if they're, so they came to us at 170,000. I know the company you're talking about, obviously. But as a result of starting with us 170,000 5 years ago, they brought on our Distillers, that's Diageo, so they're listed. But would it be fair to say that they came to us as a result of us providing them with finance, they've been able to grow to the level that they are today?
It actually, you're correct, Patrick, and that's kind of part of the next thing I really wanted to discuss. If we go back to looking at the original, one of the reasons for their dramatic growth in business with Nestlé is down to the help provided to them by credit. So this is why I wanted to discuss this originator, so we can look at how the original transaction and the core principles that we build credit on, which we still use in the shipping and finance and the mining transactions, helped this originator. So every time this originator supplied its services to Nestlé, they sold their invoice as an ETR or exchange trader receivable, and Credit Exchange then paid this originator 80% of the value of that ETR upfront, so that they then had the working capital to grow their business. And the, so such as likes of Nestlé and the other customers who I mentioned too. So then when the invoices for Nestlé were traded, they were traded at payment terms that were attached. So let's use 75, as this would be an example where it would be in the range of the credit index. Now, I know if you look at the briefing, we have reported a credit index of 105, but this is an outlier and is distorted by one of our originators. During the month, the trade desk saw that several trades were significantly delayed were actually settled in full. So the eventual amount of days taken to settle some of these days or these trades even reached as high as 339 trade days. So even though this index is actually higher than previous months, it's good news for the company as we were able to clear out some long-standing invoices. So then back to Nestlé, they will pay us directly into the credit bank account. And just like how I've mentioned with all our shipping and mining trades, when all their ETO income from the machines or ships flows directly to us, the repayments on trades or invoices does the same. And that's important because that's one of the ways in which we protect your investors' funds. In this Nestle example, this is what we call trade finance, and that's what an investable ETO is. It's perhaps not trade finance in its purest form, but that's how we label it internally. Credit Exchange has created a method of finance where we use ETOR to create the relationship between the Nestlés of this world and your investors, and we buy these ETOR at a discounted price. So back to the principle using where we pay 80% on day one, and then after it settles on day 75, we release the further 20% back to the originator. Now, I know a lot of you will know this already from previous briefings, but I did just think it would be good to, you know, maybe give a refresher after talking about some big ships and mining over recent months. And through that 20% and small charges we do also bring into it, this is where we create the margin for your investors. And so, as I said, these are the core principles that credit was built on and are the same principles we employ today in our high profile trades, as I said, with the MIP, shipping and mining. But most importantly, what it actually also shows that credit is still a business and is in the business of helping real companies grow and achieve their own growth. So as with our previous briefings over the past few months, it's at the point now where I'll pass you over to Patrick to talk you through some of our potential deals that his team, the Deal Desk, are looking at and could potentially happen in the future.
Thanks, Andrew. And yeah, following your lead, of course, I could talk about the various transactions we have looking at this financing a particular transaction for sugar in Brazil, and indeed another one to do with soybeans, etc. But probably the most fascinating conversation I've had in, I would say, quite a while was with a chap based in Qatar, of all countries. And I'm not being disrespectful to Qatar, by the way, but this chap in Qatar has been selling Hallmark greeting cards. So those of you on the call not familiar, Father's Day and a whole bunch of other things are all called like Father's Day and other events are all created by Hallmark. The only one that's actually not created by Hallmark is Mother's Day. Hallmark being the company that is, size of it, $1.9 billion income per annum. They have agents all around the world. This chap happens to be based in Qatar. And as recently as 2021, he went to them and said, listen, I'm a bit tired of selling Hallmark cards in English. I want to sell them in Arabic because there's a whole bunch of Islamic holidays that, yes, Hallmark have English cards to celebrate Islamic holidays, but I actually want to do them in Arabic. And they turned him down. So he went off and did them in his own brand and went back to them with the results. And they were then impressed that they've now made this particular chap in Qatar the sole provider of Arabic cards for Hallmark worldwide. So whether you are based in Malaysia or the Philippines, you will soon be going on to, as a distributor, you'll be soon going on to the Hallmark site. You'll be ordering Islamic cards. And this chap in Qatar will be the producer of it. There's significant margin on these cards. And the majority of the margin will go to this company in Qatar. The reason I'm finding it so fascinating is, first of all, that someone in Hallmark should have looked, well, hang on a second, how many Islamic religious people are there in the world? And they would have found out, well, there's a billion of them. And this chap, if he produces Arabic cards, when an Arabic-speaking person walks into a shop to buy a Hallmark card, they're going to have one in English and one in Arabic. Which one are they going to buy? Of course, they're going to buy the one in Arabic. So it's sort of telephone number type business, what he's talking about. We're in discussions and saying, well, okay, you've a great business. You're going to sell these cards all around the world to all these distributors, but who is actually going to pay you? And the good news is that Hallmark pays them. So no matter who's supplying, whether they're in the Philippines, Malaysia, or whatever, he'll get the orders in through the Hallmark Central website. He'll print the cards and put them, freight them out to wherever they have to go. And his debtor, in our parlance, will be Hallmark. So please God, that actually does come about, because I think it's A, fascinating, and B, a fantastic opportunity. And he and I both ended the call yesterday saying, I think that if we work together, we can make this work. And to Andrew's point, it's not all about ships and commodities. We do also do other things, but this does fall into trade finance because it is across borders. That's a good example of a non-commodity-based transaction. And as I said, hopefully it comes about. Back to you, Andrew.
Perfect. Thanks, Patrick. And as always, as I do say, it is great to hear some of these deals, and especially with the kind of to get the insight into them that we wouldn't have known that Hallmark didn't do Arabic. So maybe they missed a mark there. And hopefully we actually might be able to talk about some of these deals in maybe one of our trade sections in the near future. But anyway, so back to it. As discussed before, we actually always do say that credit always does keep an eye on what is going on in the world when looking to write new business, as this is because trades that have significant relevance to today's current affairs will always be available, as they are what, you know, the world and the market are focusing on. If we look to the seaborne reports, and that kind of tend to cover the major activity that could be affect shipping and economies, they're actually continuing their narrative from previous months, which was around the Saudi oil cuts. Even though these negative are going to have negative effects, they're actually seeming to help drive up one corner of the global oil market. Prices for sour crude oil have actually climbed globally this month after top exporter Saudi Arabia hiked prices and expanded its production of cuts of oil. This is probably not a surprise. If you cut the supply, the price is going to go up. The first sign, and it's also the first sign of its efforts to prop up its prices, and it's going to have a global impact. If we look to a different set of reports from Seaborne, they're actually telling a story between US and their liquefied natural gas project, which is actually showing some interesting growth. The US are currently approving more LNG projects than they have ever before, and they've so far approved 3 this year, which is actually a record for the number of new projects in any year. And as the US continues this push on LNG, they actually became the world's largest producer in 2022, while it's also predicted that the US natural gas production and demand will rise to record highs in 2023. And this is according to the US Energy Information Administration. And a large part of that is actually put down to the high volumes of LNG being shipped to Europe, obviously to displace the Russian gas. But just like how, you know, in the UK, they're suffering from the Just Stop Oil protests, this kind of expansion into LNG in the US is having somewhat of the same effect. There's reports of a merger of nearly 150 environmental justice groups that have urged the Biden administration to abandon talks with global energy companies on standards for certified natural gas. And then to finish off the section, Seaborne's report once again holds steady their figures from previous about the changes to the global fleet, with both the Handymax and Panamax set to lose over 15% of their fleet in the next 5 years. And again, their future order book is still not sufficient to replace this loss. If we move then to look at the Baltic Index, it has had a relatively steady month that has ended close to where it began. It started out at 933 and climbed above 1,240. Before dropping again and ending the month at 1,063. Hopefully the index can recover in the second half of the year. It's currently set at 1,067 as of today. The FFA markets have also fallen since the last briefing. The current spot price is seen at $7,500 per day, while the FFA markets for Q3 are showing $8,650 per day, and Q4 is $10,750 per day. And Q1 in 2024 is also remaining quite low at $9,100 per day. On the economic front then, it has been much the same for Europe. Inflation is still high and is finding it difficult to come down, while the ECB continue to signal they will increase inflation rates. with a further 25 basis points increase only announced today. This is the ninth increase in the last year, and it's an unprecedented year-long monetary policy tightening in an effort to bring inflation back down from the recent record highs to its 2% target. These rate increases are hopefully reaching their peak, as it now looks where the return effect of decreasing inflation is being outweighed by the negatives caused by the increased interest rates. Eurozone banks have reported a sharp fall in demand for business loans to its lowest level on record, bolstering calls for the ECB to abandon hints of further interest rate rises. Tighter monetary policy is designed to constrain demand for credit, but economists said the rapid contraction of bank lending and gloomy economic outlook make the ECB governing council less likely to commit to another rate rise this September. The knock-on effect of the rate hikes is actually clear to see, with Bank of Ireland yesterday announcing their fourth increase to their mortgage rates in a year by a further 25 basis points. It is expected that the rest of the Irish banks will follow suit, and Davy economist Eoghan Macaulay said markets had fully priced in this 25 percentage point rise this week, but another rise in September was now looking less likely. While the cost of mortgages and lending increases, inflation is very noticeable for holidaymakers also at the moment, with the Financial Times reporting that holidays abroad are on average 38% more expensive compared to this time last year. If we look to America, there's growing optimism, though, around the US economy's health. Alarm over a possible recession has blared for well over a year. But in recent months, a cool down of inflation alongside resilient job gains has actually quieted the noise. There is a growing optimism among some forecasters that the economy could avoid recession altogether. However, though, the US faces a pair of tests this week. The Fed announced on Wednesday a decision to impose its 11th interest rate hike since March 2022. Potentially escalating an aggressive fight against inflation that risks plunging the nation into a downturn. This increase has raised the benchmark overnight interest rate to between 5.25% and 5.5% range. That would bring it to roughly the highest level since the 2000-2009 financial crisis and also the recession. Then today, a government agency will also later release its first estimate for GDP for the first 3 months ending in June. This will then give a good insight into whether their economy grew or shrank during that period. The economy has proven to be more robust and resilient than we thought, though, according to Mark Hamrick, who is chief at a personal finance company known as Bankrate. Now, for this section, I would actually like to discuss the briefing itself. And you'll see in the figures in the first section showing the active RSA of 65.97 million euro, with 71.28 million euro fully allocated. If we look to the right-hand side, we can see the credit index has increased. As already discussed, this is distorted by one originator settling old invoices. The trading figure for the month was 17.58 million euro, with all available ETR in the market fully utilized. Treasury performance was 9.98 million euro for the same period, and the exchange's performance continues to be ahead of all prior years by 31.609%. Our list of top 10 largest holdings and top 10 rated once again contain regular appearances from the like of the HSE and Lesne. And at the top of the list, once again, it's Balfour Beatty and Skansen Scantain. And these are two of our mining debtors involved in HS2 in the UK. This is Balfour Beatty's fifth month in a row on the list and Skansen's sixth, whilst also the fifth month in a row, these are the two largest debtors or holdings on the exchange. Tarmac and Lancashire Council round off our mining contingent. And we actually have a new addition to the list, which is SPD, which represents a recent shipping trade we completed. Then our donut graphs, they're actually also showing, again, once showing a well-diversified spread of investments, with the largest sections in wholesale, retail, health and community, and construction. These sectors have identifiable debtors on the top 10 largest holdings listed again, and Nestle once again representing wholesale and retail, HSBC and Lucan Lodge for health and community, and then our mining companies in construction. These donut graphs continue to show the strong levels of diversification employed by credit. If we look to the performance sector, we can see the 2023 M06 versus 2022 M06 was up 38.11% at 17.58 million euro traded for June of this year, compared to 12.73 million traded in June of 2022. Volumes continue to remain down by 12.84%. as the value to volume ratio increases in line with higher value and quality traded ETR. Investor redemptions decreased for June to a 1.49 million euro. And there's also again a repeat of the credit index of 105. And for a fourth month in a row, a mining trade with the HS2 project in the UK was the single largest trade at 2.410 million sterling. Our trend section then charts the interest rate for the month running outside of the current demand fixed and term rates. As we all know by now, we once again have increased our investable rates and offer for our three products. As we have discussed at our recent briefings, we will continue to monitor the market and will act if needed. Bank of Ireland announcing yesterday an increase to their deposit rates along with their mortgage rates, it'll be interesting to see if the rest will follow suit. The bank announced that their Super Saver account, which would be similar to our demand product, which is at 4.25%, would increase by 50 points to 2%, while their one-year fixed term deposit increased by 25 points to 1.5%, while our fixed product is currently at 5%. As mentioned, we are continuously watching the market and always elaborating if and when to act. The trend section further discusses how demand for investable is below where it should be, but a combination of these new rates and exchange-traded securities, which Patrick briefly mentioned at the start, it is predicted that this imbalance will be rectified. And as before, the briefing document ends with a repeat of the RSA figure of 65.97 million euro, and that concludes this month's briefing for June 2023. Thank you very much.